Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're wrapping up Madonna Week today on our show, and we'll hear about two rock bands. One is the interactive video game Rock Band, which is going away. The other is J. Roddy Walston and The Business, which may never go away because they never seem to get off the road. Their journeys bring them to our studio today for a live set. Of course, they have a long way to go to match Madonna, who's been on the charts and on the road and on the silver screen since 1983. So as we finish up our Madonna Week festivities, let me read you an email that we got from one of our listeners earlier in the week. Jessica, here in New York, wrote in to say this. I love that you're doing a whole week of programming dedicated to Madonna. Please try not to focus only on her 80s and 90s material. For Madonna fans, her recent music and work is just as relevant and exciting as her older material. Now, Jessica makes a good point. Madonna's recording career turned 30 this year. That's why we're doing this Madonna Week, after all. And since it's currently 2013, that means that almost half her time in the biz has taken place after the turn of the century. So, today, we've invited Billboard editor Joe Levy to join us with a look at the modern side of Madonna. Joe, welcome back.
Hey, how are you?
Good to have you back.
Good to be here.
So, we have kind of focused, almost inevitably, on the Madonna of the past, of the 80s and the 90s. She's certainly still around today and, you know, topping the charts, at least in terms of, like, you know, live music and live touring and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. That tour behind MDNA, the last album, was the biggest tour of the year. When she goes out on tour, it has been for decades now, a magnificent production.
And Forbes has listed her as the top-earning celebrity this year. I mean, you know, ahead of Steven Spielberg, ahead of everybody, you know, whatever field they're in.
Pretty astounding, isn't it?
Well, is it? I mean,
yeah.
Isn't it
no, because we're talking about, go back to the 90s when she and Prince signed deals with Warner Brothers that were the biggest the record industry had seen. Prince signed his and then was angry and is still angry that Madonna got more. Now, that's going back 20-odd years ago.
Yeah.
Is Prince still the top earning celebrity in not just the music business, but the entertainment business at large? No, but there's Madonna.
Yeah.
That's kind of remarkable.
Now, she also did one of those Reddit AMA, Ask Me Anything. Hers was an Ask Me Almost Anything this week. A lot of the questions seem to be kind of nostalgic, looking back at the old days. And this tour that you're talking about, a lot of the set list were older songs as well.
I mean, I think the amazing thing is she keeps going and she keeps focusing current attention on her in the moment. Remember that MDNA launched with that Super Bowl performance,
right?
That was a big deal at the time. Now, look, she now qualifies. She's entering her fourth decade in her recording and performing career. She now qualifies as a veteran artist. Veteran artists always struggle. When they go out on tour, people want to hear the hits. You go hear Bruce Springsteen. Hey, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be 3 hours long. And did you show up to hear the songs from Wrecking Ball? Not so much. You showed up to see if Rosalita can come out tonight.
Right, right.
And whether or not you're at the top of your game as a performer, and we can argue about, hey, should the Stones still be doing it? People show up to hear the classic songs. And when they release records, when Springsteen releases a record, even when U2 now releases a record, you tend not to focus as much attention on the current release as when Madonna does. That's because she's always been great at manipulating the moment and manipulating the media. But I'm here to tell you that last record, that's a good record.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating record, and it's a good record, and is so often the case with Madonna, she's not going to get the credit that she deserves for making music.
Well, now, you mentioned the record MDNA, which I know you liked a lot, but there was a lot of critical blowback to this record.
Critical blowback to a Madonna record? This has never happened before. It was completely different in the 80s. No, wait, it was the same, but it was completely different in the 90s. It's always this way.
So why do you like it when all of your colleagues are giving it?
Well, because I'm brainwashed and have been for quite a while. Because it is an angry, fascinating, and personal record of the sort that she hasn't made before. Her previous album, Hard Candy, it's a sex record. But this is a record about getting divorced. This is a record that is as bitter and as sad and as full of longing in its own way as, say, Blood on the Tracks. Is it going to get that same sort of consideration? No, it's not a lyric record in that way, but it is a record about emotional pain and about unbelievable bitterness and anger and real longing for the person that she's lost.
Let's hear an excerpt. The song is Love Spent from Madonna's MDNA. Love Spent from Madonna's last record, MDNA, her last studio record. There is the MDNA World Tour album that was released earlier this month as well. Joe Levy, editor of Billboard magazine, loves the record. Let me just ask you something. I mean, Madonna is known as a kind of a musical chameleon to rival David Bowie. You know, she's constantly changed her look and her aspect and the way she handles her image. You yourself said just a moment ago she manipulates the media. So how much of the emotional content of this divorce record feels genuine to you, and how much is just more...
It feels genuine to me. I mean, that's a judgment call,
yeah.
But the hold me like you hold your money, I guess if I was your treasury, you would have learned to treasure me. Hey, that's not Cole Porter, but I don't think she's kidding around, because she actually has no reason to make this record. She hadn't talked about the divorce publicly at that point. She has no reason to, make this particular kind of record. She could have made a I Will Survive, I Will Go On, Everything is Fine, Let's Go Out and Party. She could have made that record in her sleep.
Yeah.
This record is a challenge to make.
Right. And especially, you know, she's 55 now, and she's, you know, there's a whole host of younger musicians who want that throne that she
has. There are a whole host of younger musicians, let us be clear, who would not exist without her.
Now, that raises an interesting point. Let me play for you. This is one of the voicemails that's been coming in on our phone line during this Madonna week. This is Daria from New York.
My question about Madonna and Madonna's career is, how does John Schaefer and his guests see Lady Gaga versus Madonna? Am I just jaded, thinking that Lady Gaga is less musical or less talented, or just trying to imitate Madonna's career path?
What do you think, Joe?
Well, Lady Gaga isn't less musical. In point of fact, Lady Gaga is more musical, straight up, more able to sit down at the piano, play a song, sing a song, unaided by, technology.
Right.
But that said, Lady Gaga, sure. No Madonna, no Lady Gaga. Because Madonna is, there are many blueprints for Gaga, and one of the interesting ways is how she mixes them up. But no Madonna, no Lady Gaga, because Madonna doesn't, you know, clears the way, let us say.
Yeah.
For all of that meditation about fame and sex, Gaga updates it for the current moment, God knows. And she does many other things besides it. But, you know, I go back to the 90s when, at the time of her first or second record, Liz Phair said, I thank Madonna for kicking the door open for all of us. That's Liz Phair.
Right.
Indie rock goddess talking. That's not Lady Gaga. That's not someone working in the dance pop world. There are plenty of female musicians who acknowledge, and there should be more male musicians, quite frankly, who acknowledge that Madonna opened the door to try different things. She is a liberation artist first and foremost.
Now, so how does she compete with this younger generation of people for whom she has paved the
path? She's pissed at Gaga on that record, by the way. You're free to think that the lyrics about biters are addressed at someone else, but I don't. how does she compete? For one thing, she brings them into the fold. That's what she's been doing on the last three albums, recording with Justin Timberlake, recording with Kanye, recording with Nicki Minaj and MIA on this last record. But she competes by going out and doing her thing.
She's also doing other people's things,
how do you
it
mean?
Seems. Like the pictures of her wearing the grill on her teeth. And
I think the clearest example was on that last tour, the Riot Girl-like graffiti on her body changed from tour stop, but addressed current moments and often was about what was happening with Pussy Riot. And I myself was surprised by that. Madonna has always taken she's less an inventor than a, let us say, recombiner.
Like a synthesizer.
She didn't invent voguing,
right?
But she's the reason that many people in America know about it. But her Vogue was much closer to the voguing moment than, say, the body graffiti was to the Riot Girl moment, which is more than 20 years
20
old.
20 years, yeah, in the past. And then, of course, there's the moment at the Ultra Music Festival last year where she's asking the crowd if anyone's seen Molly. You know, she got into a little Twitter war with, was it Deadmau5?
She got plenty of blowback from people who were furious that she had associated dance music with drugs. What?
What a surprise.
Gambling at Rick's Place? I'm shocked by this accusation. You know, what they were angry about was that someone from the mainstream had come in and focused mainstream attention on something that, as we've seen, and seen very recently here in New York City, continues to be a problem in the dance music world.
Yeah, so I think that you know, has anyone seen Molly, which is the nickname for the drug known as MDMA, as opposed to her record title, MDNA, you know, people I think just thought that might have been a little irresponsible on her part.
She may have been cavalier about it in that moment.
Yeah. We're speaking with Joe Levy, the editor of Billboard magazine, as we reach the end of our Madonna week, looking at Madonna today. Was MDNA, the album, the tour, the album of the tour, does this represent a kind of comeback for her?
No, I think it represents just things going on. Let's be clear that the album of the tour is really a DVD. It's just the audio portion of a DVD. I'd be amazed if anyone buys a Madonna live album. What a stunning thing that would be. I'd just like to hear her sing live. I don't want to see the pictures. Who is that guy? I'd like to meet him. But I think this is all just a continuing. It's a refusal to stop and to stop moving forward. In that way, she is a shark. You know, she moves forward or she dies. And again, there's something unique about this. You know, at a time when most male musicians faced a midlife crisis, you know, the classic 60s guys hit 40, they hit 50, they made the worst records of their career. Street Legal, those Stones 70s albums, the Stones 80s albums, for God's sake. I mean, the worst records of their career, and they often did it by trying to keep up, right? Dylan trying to keep up with electro pop in the 80s. All of this awful, awful stuff. Whereas Madonna, who had always been about the current moment, continued on in the current moment, through the 90s, through the 2000s, made some of the most consistent albums of her career, made some of the great one-off singles of her career, those great odd William Orbit songs like Beautiful Stranger, these things that seemed almost like throwaways but were incredibly enjoyable.
Haven't we met? My chance on a beautiful stranger.
A little bit of Madonna's 1999 song Beautiful Stranger, written for the Austin Powers movie The Spy Who Shagged Me. Joe, you liked her most recent album, MDNA. What about the one that came beforehand, Hard Candy? Which, you know, sold 4 million copies in the 21st century. That's a big seller. The album beforehand, Confessions on a Dance Floor, sold 3 times that amount.
I would say it's a good record. You know, she's... To be fair in all of this, she did make her bad record, American Life, her revolutionary record.
Mm-hmm.
But then she did make 3 good to great records. Confessions on a Dance Floor is a very good, surprisingly consistent record. Hard Candy is an enjoyable record of the sort that she's made before.
Mm-hmm.
But then this last record, MDNA, to me, a surprise.
Well, if we go back to 2008, the album Hard Candy features, among others, Kanye West on this song called Beat Goes On.
It's an impromptu, I want you. Now I'm going to tell you what I want to do to you. Your girlfriend, she wants to. Beautiful. Just flew in from Perry, Boulevard. In a city that don't snooze. Smooze amongst the who's who's. And I use my select to get this one home. Why everything that feel good gotta be so wrong. Give me room now. I'm like a vampire under full moon now. And I don't know about you now. But I think I wanna try something new now. See what it do now. And when you sat down, cause you was losing your breath now. Cause you be doing it to death now. She be doing E to F now. What's left now? Mr. West now. Can you get any more fresh now? I think I just did, just now. Talking my yeah, that's it. I'm a professional, I admit that. Flashing lights, so I live that. Fame is a drug, wanna hit that. Cause I know exactly where to get that. Did you get that? Get down, BB. Gotta get up off of your seat. Get down, BB. Gotta get up off of your seat now. Cause I know exactly where to get that. Did you get that?
A little bit of Kanye West there on the Madonna song Beat Goes On from her 2008 album Hard Candy. She seems, Joe Levy, to be one of a handful of artists who's situated in such a way that she can kind of ride out this depression in record sales, because music is just a part of the Madonna experience.
Sure, music is a part of the Madonna experience. The selling of recorded music is a part of the Madonna experience. But for like a lot of artists, she's understood for a good long time that the business is a live business. If you're talking about making money off of music, you are talking about going on the road. You're talking about selling T-shirts and other merchandise to fans and selling tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the last record came as a ticket bundle. You bought a ticket to the tour. You got a free download of the record.
Right. But it's never just been the music. I mean, she's the worlds of fashion, film. We've talked about that this week. And then there's this other project. Do you know anything about this Art for Freedom thing that she's talking about?
The project with Stephen Klein that she's just announced. No, I know what other people know, that it's meant to be an interactive art project of some sort around the idea of freedom, liberation, and censorship of the art. So these are things that she has been talking about for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. Joe Levy is the editor of Billboard magazine. We've been talking about Madonna all week. It's the 30th anniversary of that self-titled debut album. And Joe, great to see you again.
Good to be here.
All this week, we've been inviting you to share your Madonna moments. I want to thank everyone who's called us or emailed us. We've also gotten a few comments on our website at soundcheck.org. Cubics from Ontario says, "It was 1998. Ray of light had graced the face of the earth, and Canadian MTV was presenting Madonna-thon. I was a 10-year-old boy who was a little confused about these new feelings I started having for other boys. one video after another, and I soon discovered that not only was I falling in love with this open-minded, beautiful, and powerful woman, but through her art, I, for the first time, felt more normal than everyone else in the room. Since that day, Madonna has been a great source of inspiration and strength in my life. Carol from White Plains says, I knew her before she was the Madonna. I spent a month one summer at the American Dance Festival where she was a student, dressed in ripped leotards with safety pins. She started telling a story near the end of the workshop that she was going to go to Paris to become a rock star. Oh, sure, what an ego. Imagine my surprise when she came out with that first album. And Arby says, the first time I broke my toe, it was running into my bedroom to turn up the radio to hear a Madonna song. The song was Get Into the Groove. I heard it come on and raced into my room to turn up the stereo and promptly slammed my foot as I rounded the corner. For a number of years, my friends and I referred to it as the Break Your Toe song. It's not too late to add your Madonna moment. Go to soundcheck.org and click on Share Your Madonna Moment. Up next, we hear about the rise and fall of Rock Band. The company behind the popular video game released its final play-along songs earlier this year. That's next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The play-along video game called simply Rock Band recently announced an indefinite hiatus. The once popular game, which let players indulge their rock star fantasies by playing with instrument-like controllers, was praised by critics and sold millions of units since it emerged in 2007. So, what happened? Anthony John Agnello, a writer for the Gameological Society, charted the rise and fall of Rock Band the game and joins us today in the Soundcheck studio. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Confused. What is the Gameological Society? Is that even a real word?
It is absolutely not a real word.
All right. So it's just a bunch of you who write about games and stuff.
This is a collective of individuals who write criticism about games, and it was the brainchild of John Tatey, who was at one time the AV Club's video game editor, and before that he ran a site called The Crispy Gamer.
All right, now Rock Band was a very popular game, and, you know, for a number of years, and like so many rock bands before it, doesn't want to say that they've broken up. So indefinite hiatus, what does that really mean?
The indefinite hiatus is, you know, It's no different than REM saying, you know, we're going to quit for a little bit while. This is not Michael Stipe saying we are never going to do this again, because everybody knows Michael Stipe is going to get to be 75 years old and he's going to be like, ooh, I need to play Losing My Religion for money right now. But the thing that happened is, you know, like a Limp Bizkit, they flooded the market with Rock Band games when it suddenly became clear that it was hugely popular and everybody wanted a piece of it. And they ended up putting out, you know, there were the Rock Band 1, 2, and 3, but in addition to that, there were about 40 other games released over the course of just 3 years. And it just collapsed.
Too much of a good thing? Collapsed under its own weight?
You know, it was too much of a good thing sold in exactly the wrong way. Because the big money in Rock Band was selling these giant plastic instruments, not just new songs. And after a certain point, you know, how many times can you trick a family into spending $200 on yet another plastic drum and guitar?
Right. Now, the great thing about Rock Band, as opposed to Guitar Hero, where you stand solo in front of the screen and, you know, press buttons, was that you had a kind of a band feeling. You know, you were in a room with your family or your friends, and someone was behind the plastic drums, and someone had the plastic guitar, and maybe someone had a plastic bass, and there was a plastic mic. And you could kind of get the vibe of being in a band. That was not the original intent of the game, was it?
Not necessarily. I mean, the band was always the dream of this team that made Guitar Hero. These guys in Boston called Harmonix, you know, they have always made games that are based around music, but it was just sort of keeping rhythm with an electronic song that was there. And then Guitar Hero was the first stab at this.
Right.
And they're like, we're going to do the fantasy of being a guitar player. But for rock band, they thought, we want to give everybody this thing. But their vision originally was that everyone would be playing online.
Right.
And they wouldn't be playing in the same room. And, you know, you would call up your friend and say, hey, man, I just bought my drums. And, you know, he's in Seattle and his buddy with the guitar is in New York and they're going to sign on and their buddy in New Orleans is the one with the mic. And, you know, the thinking there was nobody's going to want to spend $200 on a giant box of plastic instruments. Mm. But they did. Everyone did. And they loved it.
I did. I have Rock Band at home. I haven't played it in a while, but, you know, it was kind of an addictive experience, especially the drums. I mean, it was the guitar, which is an instrument I play. Mm. I was at sea with the plastic guitar, but the plastic drum kit was like, man, I'm rocking here. It was like, I mean, did you have a favorite Rock Band song?
Well, you know, it's funny. I know how to play the trumpet. This is my musical training, but I have an awful, awful sense of physical rhythm. Just terrible. So both the guitar and the drums, I'm always in that situation like I need to move my hands and my feet simultaneously. It's not happening. So I view it as the ultimate karaoke machine.
Mm-hmm.
This is my chance to, you know, stand up there and do the perfect blend of Glenn Danzig and Stevie Nicks at the same time. Dramatic poses down on a knee and wiping sweat off my brow.
To what song?
Oh, Tears for Fears, Head Over Heels. Every single time, Tears for Fears, Head Over Heels. My wife at this point begs me not to do Tears for Fears again. But then I do it anyway and I sing it right to her.
This is Anthony John Agnello's favorite from the game Rock Band. For Fears with Head Over Heels, 1985 song that was the writer Anthony John Agnello's favorite in the band, in the game Rock Band. I keep calling it a band because that was the experience of it. If you were just sitting there with the plastic mic singing to your wife, that's karaoke. But if you have people who can pick up the plastic drums and play the plastic guitar for it, then you're fronting a band. Is that the experience?
You do capture that feeling automatically, and it's so strange that even just sitting in your living room with a couple of buddies at 3 in the morning picking up these dinky little plastic instruments, you do manage to have that essence in the moment.
And not quite as dinky as they might be.
No, I mean,
they were built pretty solidly, right?
Well, they built them as solidly as they could, and it was an evolutionary process. The very first guitar that they made for Guitar Hero was a simple enough thing, but they broke very, very easily. Because, you know, there's no preparing for what people are going to end up doing in their own home. You know, somebody's going to sit there and just start smashing the thing.
Someone's going to want to be Pete Townsend and do the complete windmill.
Yeah. And they're just not built for that. But slowly but surely, over the course of, you know, the years that they went from Guitar Hero to Rock Band, they got a whole lot better at making them.
We're speaking with Anthony John Agnello. His article, The Rise and Fall of Rock Band, was written for the Gameological Society. You can find a link on our website, soundcheck.org. One potential problem with the game, and you know, I've stumbled over it twice already just talking about it, is the name, Rock Band. We at Soundcheck went up to their studios in 2007 when they were launching the game, and we went up there and we tried out the game, we picked up the instruments, we had a great time. And I cannot find that archive on soundcheck.org because when you type in Rock Band, you get all the rock bands that have been on the show. So I know it's there someplace. Cannot find the thing. Was that ultimately kind of a misstep?
You know, I don't think so, because inevitably when they do come back, and they will come back at some point, that name is going to be every bit as iconic as they wanted it to be in the first place.
So what were the problems that led to this quote-unquote indefinite hiatus?
The problems that led to the indefinite hiatus were the too much of a good thing, too fast problem. You know, they just released too damn many of these games. And at the exact same time, you know, you have Guitar Hero, which stayed a franchise but owned by a different company, and they were trying to do the same thing. So, you know, Guitar Hero 5 became Band Hero, and they released their own plastic instruments, and Rock Band's still trying to do their thing, and then they got in the business of trying to release, you know, band-specific sets. So you have Beatles Rock Band, you have Green Day Rock Band, and all of these different things, and you just had an enormous audience that already owned the essential parts of the product but wouldn't keep going out and buying it.
So if you had Rock Band 1, 2, or 3 and were a Beatles fan, what was the incentive to get Beatles Rock Band?
And well, that's the other thing. They confused their audience because you could just go out and buy the disc. But a lot of people didn't know that. They thought, oh, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to buy the whole box and have... You know, they had a replica of Paul McCartney's old guitar in there, but, you know, only the most diehard McCartney obsessive is going to, like, think, I need that in my home right now.
So, Rock Band Beatles, a missed opportunity?
A missed opportunity only insofar as they didn't get the discography in there. They got Rubber Soul in there, they got Abbey Road in there, but, you know... The fact that I can't go into their little download store and play the Beatles cover of Mr. Postman is a crime. It is a crime.
But you can get all the songs on Rubber Soul, including this one.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for now. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere man, please listen, you don't know what you're missing.
The Beatles, Nowhere Man, from their album Rubber Soul. That is one of the albums that the folks at Rock Band were able to actually get for the Beatles version of Rock Band. Anthony John Agnello, writer for the Gameological Society. His article, The Rise and Fall of Rock Band, is linked on our website, soundcheck.org. Just listening to the Beatles recording, it occurs to me if you did buy Beatles Rock Band, you didn't want one plastic mic. You wanted three or four plastic mics. You wanted those Beatles harmonies. Is that something that was part of that game?
Absolutely. And that was something that was very novel about Beatles Rock Band, is that they had actually built in a way for multiple vocalists to sit there and harmonize. But they didn't provide you with multiple mics. You got to go out and buy that extra one.
Okay. So my understanding was that at some point, you know, the big kind of... caveat about Guitar Hero and Rock Band was, especially with the guitars, you're just playing a button. You're not learning anything at all about the experience of making music. That might have been different with the drums. But they were going to work on that, right? Wasn't that the story, that they were going to actually sort of take you to the next level where you would learn to play?
Well, they did do that with Rock Band 3. That was the big evolution in the sort of 2010 swan song for the series. There is Pro Mode. And they ended up, you know, releasing an actual six-string guitar. And there are lessons that you can take within the game that'll teach you how to play the keys. They'll actually, there's a little keyboard. You can actually learn the keys. You can actually learn the drums if you buy the big pro set with the cymbals and everything. And you can learn guitar. But it's very hard to learn a musical instrument.
Yeah.
And so the average person might think they want to do that. But once they're actually faced with the task, you know, they sit there and they say, I want to just press the button again.
Right. Or buy a real instrument.
Or buy a real instrument.
Okay. All right. So maybe a little overambitious there, but with, it sounds like, the best of intentions. So Rock Band on indefinite hiatus, what does that mean for folks who are sitting at home with the game? They have the controllers. They have the songs. I mean, will those continue to be out there?
Well, it is becoming increasingly difficult to walk into a store and buy brand new versions of these instruments. Everybody's just sort of, you know, it's whatever stock is out there.
Right.
They're not pumping these into the market anymore. At the exact same time, you can still pop in your game and go online and download a huge number of songs that they've released for the series over the years. However, these are starting to disappear as the licenses lapse.
Oh.
So if you want certain songs, you got to go get them now. Otherwise, they won't be there, at least for now.
Right. Okay. But again, your thinking is somewhere down the road, the franchise is just too valuable for it to go away completely.
Rock Band has broken up as much as, you know, any indie rock band from the past 25 years has. You know, this
so they're the Fleetwood Mac of games is what you're saying.
They are the Fleetwood Mac of games.
They
absolutely
can break up all they want. It's just not going to take.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the last song to be released was back in April, and it was kind of a surprise that Don McLean's American Pie, such a classic sing-along, hadn't been released before. But I guess it was an appropriate thing to end with, if indeed this is an ending. And it is for us. We've been speaking with Anthony John Agnello, whose article, The Rise and Fall of Rock Band, is linked on our website at soundcheck.org. Anthony, this has been fun. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We were singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
Up next, live music from a real-life rock band, J. Roddy Walston and The Business. They'll play a couple of songs from their new album called Essential Tremors, next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. A few years back, we met J. Roddy Walston and The Business for the first time. The Baltimore band came in, played here in the studio, and almost blew the roof off. Listeners were leaving comments like, sounds like Jerry Lee Lewis, Queen, Bowie, and Rolling Stones. Wild. Another listener wrote, holy hell, where did you find this band? They're amazing. You don't want to know where we found this band. What you do want to know is that they are back. J. Roddy Walston and The Business have a new album, which we'll find out more about after a song. This first tune is called Heavy Bells. It's J. Roddy Walston and The Business live on Soundcheck.
Daddy burned the dirt, but the seeds revived. Daddy burned the dirt, but the seeds.
That is J. Roddy Walston and The Business, live on Soundcheck with a song called Heavy Bells that appears on the band's new record called Essential Tremors. J. Roddy Walston, normally a pianist, but playing guitar on that song and, of course, singing. Billy Gordon on guitar, Logan Davis on bass, Steve Colmus behind our drum kit. Rod, it's good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
How do you sing like that? How do you do that? I mean, you sound like you're fraying every vocal cord in your neck there.
Yeah, probably am. I don't know. Yeah. My wife is an opera singer, and we have a bunch of friends, obviously, that are opera singers, too, because of that. And
oh, they must have a heart attack when they hear you do that.
They are all just like, what is happening, and why can you even talk, you know?
Yeah.
I have no idea why. I think maybe coffee. I'm not sure.
I mean, it almost sounds like, and maybe on the record this is the case, but, you know, even here, it almost sounds like you're running your voice through a distortion pedal of some kind, but you're not, at least not here.
I'm not comparing myself to him, but I've heard that when they were doing, like, the early Creedence records, they talked about how Fogerty, his voice, it sounded like, you know, a guitar through some gnarly amp or whatever.
But your sound is almost getting close to the death metal guys, you know?
Yeah, well, that's probably more due to the fact that we've been doing multiple performances of it a day for the last couple of weeks, but...
All right, so there is a little fatigue beginning to creep in?
Probably.
The album is called Essential Tremors, which is, that's a medical condition, right?
Yeah, I mean, it basically, for me at least, it boils down to I have the shakes, you know, my hands shake. You know, for different people, it can be, you know, a lot worse, and it can kind of be in your voice and neck and body and whatever.
And for you, it's in your hands.
Yeah, basically, it's just in my hands.
You're a pianist and a guitarist, so you need those hands.
Yeah.
How are you able to, you know, does it affect your playing at all?
I'm sure it does in some way. I mean, it's something that I've had since I was a kid, so whatever I do, I learn to do it with that there, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
So Essential Tremors, you know, is this kind of shaking in the hands. How much of the rest of the songwriting on this record is autobiographical? Is that pretty much the extent of it?
There's little pieces, you know, you kind of, for me, it's like, you know, if I'm setting out to write some character sketch of a terrible situation, a terrible person, I'm, you know, obviously I'm not thinking this is about me, but then as you're writing it or kind of exploring it, you're kind of like, yeah, I kind of can relate to this guy a little bit.
Now, you write short stories, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't really share them with people, but I do. You know, we got a lot of time in the van, and those are almost just free, just blast through pages and pages of kind of, it's more like dialogue than an actual story.
Do those ever turn into songs?
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, in pieces, you know, like I'll kind of take those songs and try to boil them down and kind of find the most essential part of them.
Right.
I mean, it's a challenge, you know, to kind of take potentially 40, 50 pages of stuff and say, like, can I say all of this in 40 words and 20 of them will get repeated twice, you know, or something.
Right.
You know?
We're speaking with J. Roddy Walston. He and his band, J. Roddy Walston and The Business, are here in town playing at the Brooktoberfest on Saturday, the free all-day event in Williamsburg. The new album's called Essential Tremors. Last time you were here, you played our piano, which you're going to go to now, but you were also touring around with your own piano.
Yeah, we still do.
Do you still do that?
Yeah. Probably worse for the wear. I don't know if you actually saw it. I can't remember if we brought it in.
You didn't
not.
Bring it in, but you described it as some weird sort of fold-up piano.
Yeah.
The keyboard folded inside or something
like
that.
Yeah, it's...
But I mean, it's a piano. It's not
yeah,
a,
yeah, it is
not
a piano.
Electric.
There's strings. There's a harp. You're basically like, you tune a piano and you're supposed to play it a lot, but never move it. And
right.
What we do is never tune it, just play it sometimes and move it a lot. So,
so it's got that real kind of saloon honky tonk sound to it.
Yes, there is no sonatas being performed on my piano.
So, how does your music sound when it's played on a Steinway Grand?
I guess we're going to find out.
I guess we will.
Yeah.
You want to do Marigold for us?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. J. Roddy Walston and The Business. The new album is called Essential Tremors. And while Rod played guitar on that first song, he is, in fact, moving to our Steinway Grand here in the Soundcheck studio for this next song, which is called Marigold.
You guys ready?
Yep. Marigolia with a night queen. 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 Marigolia in the city, but he takes it in the town. He likes to touch a black show. He gives around Marigolia with a night queen and a dragon. He goes down. He goes down. He goes down. He goes down.
Roddy Walston and The Business with Marigold, live on Soundcheck. You'll find that on their new record called Essential Tremors. Right now, the band is playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio. Let's hear another song. This one's called Take It As It Comes, J. Roddy Walston and The Business.
I met a family in take it as it comes.
Come on.
You gotta take it as it comes. You gotta take it as it comes. You gotta make a final run. You gotta take it as it comes. Well, I got nothing to go. I got no other life I know. Why put a bullet in the gun? You gotta take it as it comes. To lose that spawn in your bedroom with a secret. You mix it all, you mix it all with your mother's milk, no regret. In now the harmonic kiss of hearing aids humming. This is the end of the door, no death, which it is coming. You gotta take it as it goes. You gotta take it as it goes. You gotta take it as it goes. You gotta take it as it goes.
Once again, J. Roddy Walston and The Business, live on Soundcheck with a song called Take It As It Comes, with J. Roddy Walston at our piano and singing lead, Billy Gordon on guitar, and Logan Davis on bass doing some nice backing vocal work, and Steve Colmus behind our drum kit. Great to have you back.
Yeah, thank you.
A great set. Thanks so much. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Next time on the show, we talk with Rick Hall, founder of Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, about the new documentary that chronicles the story behind that famous Muscle Shoals sound. And the rapper Blitz the Ambassador returns to our studio to perform some of his latest music. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, Jason Isaac, Rick Kwan, and George Wellington. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Greta Cohn, and Mike Katziff, with Alex Kappelman, Amy Pearl, and our intern, Alex Martinez. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.